This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to a new episode of Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer. And today, I've got a really interesting interview all about the baboons in South Africa. I'm talking to Michael Blumenthal all about a book that he worked on called Because They Needed Me. And so we're going to talk about that, find out about baboons and their plight, and we're going to go from there. So, Michael, are you there?
Yes, Celia, I'm here.
How are you today?
I'm terrific. It's a beautiful day in West Virginia.
I'm jealous. It's freezing in New York.
Well, you should come here then.
I know. It's a nice state. I like it, actually. Highline Drive is great. So thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today. I read your book. It's amazing. I had no idea. I didn't know much about baboons to start. And then after reading what you guys did, I'm blown away and I'm fascinated by these animals. So if it's okay with you, I just want to get started.
Sure. No problem.
Okay. So we're talking about your book, Because They Needed Me, which was written with Rita Milho, all about the orphan baboons of South Africa. So my first question is, why are baboons being orphaned over there?
Well, you know, baboons are highly adaptive animals, and they're omnivores. So they will eat almost anything, and they will adapt to almost any environment where they can get food. So what that means essentially is they will rob farmers of their food, they will break into gardens, they will even go into apartments or cars. And so, as you can imagine, farmers particularly are not terribly fond of them. So a lot of them shoot baboons, and a lot of baboons are orphaned simply by their mothers being killed.
That's so sad.
It is sad.
It really is. And then, I mean, reading this book, Rita Miljo, she's really the character. I mean, she's so brave. I admire her bravery and her drive and the fact that she was doing this up until her 80s. Can you tell us a little bit about her and how she got involved with baboon rescue?
Well, you know, she was a remarkable, remarkable person. I got to know her by watching Animal Planet, and I just called her up, actually, and asked if I could come. But she had an amazing life. She was born, I guess it was 1931, in Germany on the Prussian border, and she was born into a very conservative family, actually, and at the age of 9, she became a member of the Hitler Youth. And actually, at the age of 9, she became the youngest province leader of the Hitler Youth. But that's not to say that she was a Nazi. She was a young girl. And at the time in Germany, it was almost the equivalent of being in the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
But she had loved animals as a child, and her father did too, and took her out into nature a lot. And as a young girl, she left home and volunteered in the zoo in Hamburg, Germany, and she had always been obsessed with animals. And then she met her husband to be, who was an engineer and who happened to get a job in South Africa. And he then asked her to follow him, and I think more because she was interested in the animals than that she was interested in her husband, she went. And they had, I don't think the happiest of marriages, but once she got there, she was a very adventurous woman, and she immediately took lessons to become a stunt pilot,
He,
but apparently she was the better pilot. And then actually a tragedy happened. They had a daughter, and her husband, I guess it was 1972, I'm not sure of the year exactly, but when the daughter was 17, the husband and the daughter were in a small plane crash and died.
Okay.
And there was Rita alone, and she was a very tough and determined woman, and she got very interested in animals. And at a certain point, I think it was in Namibia, she went and she found an orphan baboon named Bobby who had been injured. And she transported Bobby back into South Africa, actually, I think, crossed the border illegally with him.
Yeah.
And she was so moved by his condition that she decided to buy some land in the bush in South Africa in Limpopo province. And so she bought this 50 hectares of land and decided that she would devote herself to rescuing infant baboons because baboons were an animal nobody really cared for, and that's where the title of the book comes from. I asked her why baboons, and she said, because they needed me. And so she and Bennett Serrano, a black South African, who was kind of her partner, not romantic partner, but partner in the enterprise, they started CARE, I guess, in 1989, roughly.
Wow.
And that's how it all got started. But she had been obsessed with animals her whole life, and she still was. Not just baboons, but she loved every animal.
Wow. And so you're the son of a Holocaust refugee. So when you guys first met up, was that unusual for you, or, you know, was that okay?
Well, it wasn't unusual in the sense I had lived in Berlin and I had worked for German television. And I was well aware that, you know, just because she was a child in the Hitler Youth didn't mean she was a Nazi, but it gave us interesting things to talk about. And of course, my native language was German, my mother tongue, and hers too, though we spoke English together, but sometimes we would joke around in German. But it gave us a subject to tease each other about, or just even to have a serious conversation about.
Nice. And it's funny because it seems to be like the women that work with primates are just really, really strong, determined women. I mean, I don't know many, but the few that I know all seem to be women that, like, if you say no, they don't care. They're going to still do what they need to do. And with Rita's childhood, especially, you know, being so strict and so conservative and all that, and I'm assuming the Nazi youth program was pretty strict. Do you think that her childhood helped her in her quest to help the orphan baboons?
I'm sorry, did I think her childhood did what? Sorry?
Helped her out in her quest to help the orphan baboons. Do you think she learned stuff when she was a little kid that really helped her when she got older?
Well, you know, she would say that, you know, she was not a person who was just going to say the politically correct thing. So, you know, she didn't just say, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, being a Nazi was terrible. She said that being in the Hitler Youth gave her some things, and one was that she really loved competition. She was a very competitive person, and I think that it didn't have much effect on her relationship to animals, but I think a kind of toughness she had, a willingness to confront anybody and anything.
Yeah.
And of course, she had this love for animals much more than for humans, I have to say. So I think it just gave her a kind of toughness that stayed with her whole life. And she had to be tough. She was a woman alone in the bush with this foundation.
I mean, and especially when she got down there, you know, like she was probably down there in like the 60s or so and stay there. I mean, this woman's got guts. I'd like, the more I read about her, I was just like, wow, Rita, you're an amazing, amazing human being.
Yeah, well, she was an extremely tough person. I mean, she was a much tougher person than I am, and she could be intimidating. You know, she would boss anybody around. You know, she had a gun. She often said that the only reason she didn't shoot somebody was because she wasn't a good shot, because there were several incidents that took place where she was tempted. You know, so she was a very, very strong-willed and tough person, and she didn't suffer fools gladly.
I mean, I admire that so much. It's just all of it. And the way that she's been captured in the book, I love, because it really shows everything you're saying of the fact that, you know, she definitely is more fond of animals. But also, I mean, her moxie and her will not to give up to help this group of primates is just... I mean, I just don't have words for it. I just think she's an incredible, incredible human being.
Yeah, well, you know, she would even go out down at night by herself to feed the hyenas.
Wow.
down there. And she generally just, I suspect that if she were alive now in America, she would probably be a Trump supporter. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, she just admired this kind of toughness that people who like Trump mm-hmm. seem to admire, mm-hmm. Though I prefer her to Trump.
Fair enough. I think that's the same for me, too, definitely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's mention in the book that we talked about that the baboons like to, like, rob people or rob food crops and stuff like that. But they're definitely not as popular as chimps. Is there a reason why, like, the like spider-tailed monkeys and chimps and gorillas and stuff, do you think, why are they more popular than baboons in terms of just kind of everywhere in the world?
Well, you know, baboons, I mean, like all animals, baboons are adorable when they're young.
Yeah.
The babies and the infants are awfully cute, just like almost any infant animal. Baboons are not that cute when they get older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, chimpanzees have share about 98% of our genes. I think baboons about 95%.
Oh, wow.
And, they don't bond with people the way chimps and gorillas and orangutans do.
Okay.
Once they reach a certain age, you know, after about a year or so, they keep a distance generally. You know, I mean, Bobby, who was the baboon that Rita actually died with and knew all those years, had an attachment to her, but it wasn't at all like a chimp's or an orangutan's. He wasn't running around hugging her on her back.
Mm-hmm.
And baboons are much more intimidating looking. They have very sharp teeth. And when they open their mouths, it's kind of terrifying. It's a little bit like a lion.
Yeah.
And so they're just not cute and fuzzy when they get older the way chimps and orangutans and gorillas are. And I think that's the main reason they're not as beloved.
And how much does a full-grown male baboon weigh?
Excuse me, how much?
How much does like a full-grown male baboon weigh? Like, how big are these things when they're full-grown?
Well, the males are much heavier than the females. I think the males, somewhere between sort of 30 and 70 pounds.
Okay.
The females, a little smaller, I think up to 40 pounds or kilos. I'm not even sure. But there's a substantial difference in size and the shape of the face. So the males are quite recognizable after a certain age.
That's really interesting.
And they're pretty big. I mean, they're not as big as a gorilla, but if you're next to a full-grown large male and it pushes you, that's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing with me with primates is they fascinate me, but they also scare me. And just the thought of, you know, you and Rita, like, in South Africa with all these wild baboons. I mean, you got more guts than I do. I don't know if I could handle it. I think I'd be too worried about being attacked at all times, you know. Were you in danger with these animals ever?
Well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't compare myself to Rita. She was a much braver person than I am.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any real danger from the baboons. There was plenty of danger around. Actually, the day that Rita's assistant picked me up at the airport, and she drove me back, and we were driving back along the river there, and suddenly we came to a grave marker, and she stopped, and she looked at the grave, pointed to the grave marker, and she said, "By the way, don't go in the river. We don't want to put one of these up for you."
Oh, God.
And the grave marker was a neighbor, somebody who lived in the same area, who had had a couple of beers too many and gone in the river and was eaten by a crocodile.
Whoa.
And so when I got there, you know, I grew up in New York City.
Oh, God.
in Manhattan. I got there and right away discovered, you know, there were black mamba snakes, which if you were bitten by, you had all of 20 minutes to live.
Oh, my God.
There were crocodiles. There were warthogs. There were pythons. There were lions. Somebody had been killed by an elephant several weeks before.
Wow.
So the danger wasn't so much from the baboons, but because the baboons wouldn't confront you, and most mm-hmm. of us, we walked around with a stone in our hands. The baboons have very good eyesight, and if they see a stone, they won't go near you, and you make a point of sort of not looking big males in the eye.
Yeah.
But the baboons were not a danger, really.
That's cool. I mean, one of the things that I've heard over and over of people, so many people will go to like safari in South Africa, like photo safaris and things. And so many people don't understand that these are wild animals, that this isn't like a zoo exhibit and you can like, you know, run up and pet the elephant and things like that. And my parents were in Africa in the 60s. And they'd seen it. They were, I don't know where they were. I think they were in Nairobi, but I could be totally wrong. But anyway, they were there. And there was a military group from the UK. There was the army was there as well. And they watched this, one of the soldiers go up to a full-sized male elephant with a piece of bread to feed him. And of course, the elephant looks at him, picks him up, spins him around a couple times and throws him. And the guy, needless to say, was like horribly, horribly injured. But, I mean, this is what blows my mind. If so many people think that, like, oh, you know, it's a wild animal, but we're going to have this, like, great Adam and Eve moment, and we're just going to sit here and just play with all these good things, you know? And that really scares the hell out of me because the animals are as scared as the people are in the most case. And, you know, it's they're acting on instinct. I mean, if a crocodile attacks you, it's not personal. They're hungry, you know?
No, I mean, you know, it's not like going to the zoo. I mean, yeah. These are wild animals, and you have to respect that fact. And, you know, there have been lots of stories about people who have domesticated chimps, and then suddenly there was that terrible story on the island where this woman who had raised a chimp from infancy, the chimp attacked her best friend and tore her face apart, almost killed her. So, you know, Rita, and in these kind of places, there's complete respect for the fact that these are wild animals, yeah. You know. Of course, the infants are cuddly and needy, but you don't sort of try to get all cuddly with the grown-ups.
Nah, man. Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, we need to take a quick break for station identification, but I'm talking to Michael Blumenthal all about the book Because They Needed Me. We'll be back in about a minute.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
And we are back. I am talking to Michael Blumenthal all about his book, Because They Needed Me, about the baboons in South Africa. Fascinating book. If you are a reader, please pick it up. It is a good one. I've totally enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I really did. I mean, I am a voracious reader. I used to read about two or three books a week, and I've taken a little break. But your book actually got me back into it. And I mean, I tore through it in a day and a half. And really, it's a great, great book. And I love it because you really get a feel of being down there. Like you really get into the situation and you get a real understanding of what's going on with it. One of the questions I have for you is there's a great quote from Rita that is, if you want to know what humans are about, look at baboons. What did she mean by that?
Well, you know, Rita, I think one of the reasons she loved animals so much, and she said this about baboons, is she said, because you know where you stand with them. You know, she didn't, for example, like chimpanzees because she believed chimpanzees were like humans. You know, they could put on acts, they could manipulate you, they could, they had a lot of human qualities and interactions with baboons really don't. And so I think what she meant by that was simply, if you looked at baboons, you would see what it would be like to live entirely by instinct. And one of the things, of course, that she didn't like about people was that we were so removed from our instincts, you know, or that we had so many charades in interacting. And she always said, with baboons, you know exactly where you stand.
That's a good thing. That's a nice thing. I'm okay with that. It's so true, too.
Right.
And then one of the things that I've discovered while doing this show is it seems that, like, every animal has a purpose on the planet. What jobs do baboons have? What do they do for the environment?
Well, you know, it's a little harder to say with baboons. I mean, one thing that baboons clearly do, because they're omnivores, so they will eat anything that's not a predator of theirs, mm-hmm. anything and any creature. And so they do what all predators do in the wild. They create a certain check on populations of mm-hmm. of animals below them on the predatory cycle. They don't do something as simple, you know, as pollinate flowers, mm-hmm. or, you know, obviously they don't baboon manure, I guess you could use as a fertilizer, but it's, I don't think so, used that way. So they don't have a precise niche, and that's one of the reasons they're kind of so adjustable. They will move around to wherever there's food for them. But their function in the environment is not that precise.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah, you can't sort of put them in a particular niche. If there were no baboons, such and such would not happen.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why they really aren't that protected in South Africa, is because they don't have a specific job?
Yeah, I think generally the combination of the fact that they cause a lot of trouble for people, they're very smart, they can take anything, they broke into my car, they could, Rita had to invent a special lock that was baboon-proof because the baboons could open anything.
Wow.
They can take off your watch, they can get into your pockets, they have incredible vision, and when they're grown up, they're not adorable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of those things together make people think of them as expendable.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the people that were living there, like the South Africans, when you guys were doing this, were they, how did they feel about this?
Well, you know, Rita was not that popular, you know, a lot of people. That's why I said she said several times she would have shot somebody if she was a better shot. There were neighbors who didn't approve, you know, and the baboons would, of course, wander onto the adjacent
end. Yeah, of course.
And she wasn't beloved. Even when she died, you know, certain people kept asking me, was it arson?
Wow.
I don't believe it was, and certainly no proof it was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was, and that's why she said, because they needed me, because nobody else really cared about them.
I mean, this woman's got guts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing to me. And then the other thing I was constantly amazed at while I was reading this book is how human-like these baboons are. So what was it like working with them on a daily basis? Did you build relationships with them at all?
Well, you have, you know, I work mainly with the mediums that were sort of between 3 and 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the animals are in these small troops. According to their ages, there are two troops. There's the wild troop that lives on the property outside of the cages, and there's the cage troops, which are baboons that Rita rescued and was going to reintroduce into the wild. And they sort of interact through the cages
mm-hmm.
and visually. But when you're in with the young baboons and you walk into the cage, you're immediately the kind of the alpha male.
Oh, wow.
Because you're big.
Yeah, totally.
And so they start coming to you for protection. You know, they're fighting. It's kind of play fighting, but they're trying to establish rank.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are all these fights going on, and certain baboons will just come to you into your arms to protect them from whoever's chasing them.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally you will bond. Two baboons or one will particularly bond with you, like I had a brother-sister, Dennis and Maggie, who seemed to take a particular liking to me, who, you know, would groom me and be on my lap and so on. So, yeah, you do develop relationships. And, of course, the women who were caring for the infant baboons, who had a baboon tied around their waist 24 hours a day.
Wow.
Obviously, they're, you know, they were like mothers, so there was a very strong bond.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is something, too, that people don't understand, like the commitment. Like these women with a baboon tied around them for 24 hours at a time. I mean, that's some serious, serious love and serious commitment to the cause. So,
yeah, it's a big commitment, you know. And infant baboons tend not to like men, especially men with beards. But they can tell that a woman is a woman. And so the men did not mother baboons, infant baboons. It was only women. But essentially, the women were surrogate mothers.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions about baboons?
Well, I think the most common one is that baboons are dumb. You know, I think it's even used, you stupid baboon.
Yeah, it's true.
And baboons are anything but dumb. As a matter of fact, one reason they're so disliked is because they're so smart.
Yeah.
And they have amazing eyesight. They can get into anything. They will see anything. They will open anything.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think the biggest misconception is that they're stupid.
Yeah.
And they're anything but stupid.
And that comes across so much in the book. I mean, it's almost like there were a couple baboons and a couple stories where it was like, wait, no, it's a primate. Like, it was really like, no, that's your friend. It's like, no, it's a primate. It's not a human being, even though the behavior is so similar to a human's.
No, they're incredibly smart, and they have incredible eyesight. You know, I remember once I had a little tape recorder, and the baboons would come onto the roof. I was living next to Rita in a room. And I put my tape recorder up on the shower just so I could tape their morning sounds. Mm-hmm. And within a second, a baboon reached in to take it.
Oh.
You know, they just see everything.
Wow.
There's nothing you can keep away from them. They have much better eyesight than we do.
So do you ever go back to South Africa now?
Well, I haven't been back mainly because I was in a car accident a couple of years ago and I have a very bad back. But, my original plan, which is still kind of my plan, is I wanted to do a book about orangutans and one about chimpanzees and one about gorillas and so on, at least work through the sort of hominoids. And I'd like to go back. There's a place called Ape Action in South Africa that's run by the Jane Goodall Foundation that I would like to go to. But because of my back, I've been a little hesitant. Unfortunately, Rita's not alive anymore, so yeah. I can't go see her.
Yeah. And when did she pass?
Well, she passed very tragically. You know, the book came out in German first in 2012. And I talked to her on the phone. I think she died on July 27th. I talked to her on July 26th at about 4 o'clock. It's very hard to reach her. The phones, she's in a very remote place, so often the phones weren't working, and I'd been trying to reach her for weeks. And I finally reached her because we had to discuss something about the German edition. And it was about 4 in the afternoon on a Thursday. And we had a nice conversation, like always, and then we hung up. And the next day, or the day after, Saturday morning, I went to my email. I was in Europe at the time, and there's an email from the Washington Post, and the subject is Rita Miljo. Mm. And the reporter says, you know, your friend Rita Miljo was killed in a fire last night.
Oh.
Do you have any pictures of her?
Oh.
And it turns out that, around 8 p.m., when the volunteers were having dinner and Rita was alone, her house caught fire. Nobody still knows. And everything went up in flames. The volunteers had to run down and try and rescue the young baboons that were in cages next to her. But they couldn't get to her. You know, the place was totally in flames.
Yeah.
And she died along with three baboons, and she died with Bobby, the baboon that she had first rescued, 30 years earlier.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, it was remarkable. You know, it was really a tragedy. And I mean, I think in the book, the dedication says that she was so fiery a spirit that only fire could extinguish it.
Yeah.
There's some truth to that, you know, and I was sad that she never got to see our book in either German or English, because she died about a month before it came out in Germany.
Mm.
Yeah.
So is the rescue still going, or what's going on down there now?
Well, remarkably enough, you know, I thought very often those places are sort of dependent on one charismatic person, yeah. like Jane Goodall or Diane Fossey or Berruti Galdikas. But fortunately, Rita had an assistant, Stephen Monroe, who I believe is British or Australian, I'm not sure. And he was in charge of the releases. He was her assistant when I was there. But actually, I never met him because he was out on a release. But he and his girlfriend, Samantha, I don't think she was his girlfriend at the time, but I believe she is now, they essentially took over. And they're very, very, very dedicated to the place. And so, amazingly enough, it's still running. I think they've rebuilt Rita's house, and, you know, it's ongoing.
That's wonderful. That's such good news.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she would be very happy, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, just all the work that she's done, it's nice that some people have realized that this is actually really important and we're wanted to pick up the cause and take it, continue it, and keep it going, you know?
Yeah, no, when she died, I was fairly sure that would be the end of it because I really didn't know Stephen and Samantha, but they're apparently really doing a terrific job, and they're young and energetic and dedicated.
Perfect. Perfect. So, we're almost at a close here, which stinks because I really enjoyed this conversation. But what is the one thing that you'd like people to know about baboons? You can give me a couple more than Ruth one if you like. It's fine.
You know, I think the thing where I would agree with Rita, and I think Rita would say this, is, you know, that we can't just protect animals or love animals, you know, because they're cute and cuddly and, you know, make a good postcard, you know. And, you know, that baboons are on some ways less appealing in certain ways than certain other primates. But they're remarkable creatures, you know, and it would be a horrible thing, you know, if they didn't exist. And of course, these infants who have lost, like any infant, human or otherwise, you know, are in a tragic situation and deserve to be saved. So I think, you know, the stereotype about baboons has a certain accuracy, but I don't think people should allow it to reflect on wanting to save them or wanting to nurture them or wanting to rescue them, you know.
Yeah.
Because in their own way, they're lovable, just like a rhinoceros.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And they're special animals, and they're just, I mean, I learned so much from the book. And, you know, I have to admit that before the book, I was like, hey, baboons, okay, you know, just another monkey. And You've really changed my mind on that one. And the admiration that I have for Rita is, oh, my God. I mean, this woman's got more guts in her pinky than I think I've ever had in my entire body. You know, I think she's just admire her so much and her bravery and her strength, especially to go to a foreign country and do this that's not popular and stick to her guns and do it. So thank you so much for writing down her story and making sure that it got published and got out and sharing this information, because like I said, I think it's important, and it's a really, really, it's a great, great story.
Well, my pleasure, and as I said, I would like people to know about Rita and remember her, because she was a remarkable person.
So where is the best place for people to get the book and also to learn a little bit more about baboons if they're interested?
Well, they can certainly get it for the publisher, Pleasure Boat Studios. That's just www.pleasureboatstudios.com. It can be ordered at bookstores. It can be bought on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available, you know, the way any book is.
Easy, yeah.
But, of course, I give half of my royalties to CARE, to the foundation. So
nice.
To the extent that people are willing to buy it from the publisher, then they will get more money because Amazon takes 40% or something
that.
So it's always better for the publishers and the writers and anybody when people buy books from the publisher.
That's really good to know. I will change my habits right now.
I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I feel terrible now. It's like, oh, no.
It's good for us writers if you do. Yeah.
I'll tell you. And also, I mean, the fact that you're donating all of this for the baboons, so, like, get it through the publishers, people, and you can get a really great story, and you can help them out, too. So win-win for everybody.
Great. Thank you.
Michael, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Good
pleasure
luck with everything. It was great. It was
okay,
really, really
great.
Great
to talk to you.
Likewise. And for everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I will be back next week with another brand new episode of Animal Instinct here at Roberta's in Bushwick. Up until then, take care and have a really good week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.